Hello and welcome to Girls That Invest. Today, guys, you'll be joined by Sim and Brooke from ShareZees. Brooke is one of the co-founders, co-CEOs of ShareZees, and honestly, a very amazing, very inspirational entrepreneur. Brooke has such an amazing story. I was honestly blown away hearing from just her entire journey, start to end, what it was like becoming a woman in the financial space and what it took for her to get to where she is. You'll learn so many things from this episode. It is filled with so many amazing nuggets, not just about investing, but about personal self-development as well. So sit down, relax, and have a listen. We hope you enjoy it. Today we are joined by a New Zealand entrepreneur, co-founder, co-CEO, and director of ShareZees. Hello, Brooke. How are you?
Kia ora. I'm great, eh? How about yourself?
I am wonderful. Now, I saw that you were a recent joint winner of the 2020 New Zealand Woman of Influence Award. Congratulations. I just want to start off with that.
Oh, I appreciate that. I was really honoured to be able to receive that award alongside Sonia Williams, who you've got another podcast episode with, who's also a co-founder of ShareZees. And it was really special to be recognised for the mahi we do and recognised together, because, you know, it isn't just quite often you see, you know, one person kind of standing up and getting kind of those opportunities and that recognition where so many people are behind ShareZees and what we've created, and it's nice to be able to share that award with Sonia as an awesome founder and entrepreneur and, you know, fellow female too.
I think it's such a beautiful thing, like, not, you know, one, being recognized yourself, but also like alongside your colleague or like a good friend of yours, and kind of having two women together doing it. I think that is quite wonderful in itself. And I did have a question, Brooke. You've got your own Wikipedia page. I need to know, how does that feel?
What? I didn't know that. I didn't know. So there you go.
I did my background research. You've got a page. It talks a little bit about what you do, where you're from, where you've grown up. It's a big deal. I'll say that.
It's definitely something. that's something. I hope Shears has got one going too. Check that out.
So did you want to start off by telling us a little bit about your background, where you're from, and what sort of got you to where you are today?
Yeah, sure. Well, apparently you find it out on Wikipedia, but so where I'm from, I grew up around Manurewa and Tauranga in Omokoroa and Te Puna, and Mount Maunganui, which was just a wonderful place to grow up. And then for middle school and elementary school, part of elementary school, I did move to the States. Really, funny story, my mum and stepdad's kind of jobs went over there, and I lived in Birmingham, Alabama, and then Richmond, Virginia, and then decided that I wanted to come back to Aotearoa for high school, and came back, went to school in Hawke's Bay. I got a scholarship to go to a school there, and then ended up going to university at Victoria University and also Massey University. And when I was at university, I studied marketing and international business, and then picked up finance and loved it, and then ended up doing honors in marketing and then a master's in finance. And this whole time, ever since high school, I was just dabbling with businesses on the side. I ran a few businesses at school and really enjoyed it, and kept testing weird and wonderful ideas, and until came across Sonia and the co-founding team, and we created ShareZees in October 2016.
That's amazing. I have to ask, when you say you created side businesses when you were younger, were you one of those kids that would like sell candies as well?
Oh my gosh, how did you picture me so quickly? talking about candy, I literally just tried before this podcast, Bubblegum M&Ms, and I'm still kind of buzzed out about it. But yes, I was. I ran a tuck shop out of my locker with a friend until the school kind of shut it down, and that's when I first learned about, I guess, regulation. and then I was in this area where there was a lot of women and who had a lot of people who had kind of disposable income, and a lot of clothing shops around, and a real set. And I was really into fashion and thought I'd go into, you know, fashion design or fashion business. And I was like, gosh, it'd be great if there were, you know, were fashion events here. And so I started a business with some of my friends where we would like create fashion events for the local community and pull together the retailers and community. And it was a bit of fun, and did pretty well. So did that while I was at school. And then, And actually through Young Enterprise too, which was really good. I think I was the first to bring that to our school, which was fun.
So you were a hustler from the get-go.
I just have excess energy and curiosity and like to give things a go, yeah.
That's amazing. Did you, or would you say that there was someone or something that inspired you to be that way? Because I think like most kids, you know, back at that age, they wouldn't be so interested in stuff like that. They'd kind of be worried about, I don't know, other things.
Yeah, interesting. I think I needed to find a way to make money. Didn't have like, needed to find a way to kind of support myself. And I was working as like a dishwasher, in our local footwear store, which was pretty cool. But I think I was like, well, there's a bit of a need, and then I just, yeah, had these kind of ideas. I think my mum did support quite a bit in terms of she always had the ideas, and I liked seeing her execute them. And she was running her own business at that time, and I think maybe I got some inspiration there. And then just really wanting to give things a go.
That's pretty impressive, and it's amazing how even if we don't like realize it at the time, like, people can inspire us in ways, especially our mums.
Yeah, I think she'll be loving that shout out.
And so when you started your journey into finance at university, when did that sort of transition into the world of investing? Like, do you remember your first memory of investing or talking about it?
Yeah, my first memory of investing, I'm not sure if it's the first memory of talking about it, but I remember when I was at university and hearing about how some people were using their student loans or allowance and putting it into, investing it, or their parents were investing it for them. And I was like, whoa, all my money was going towards living and then working too. So I didn't really have the spare means to be able to make anything happen at that stage, because when I was at university, there was nothing like Sharesies, or, you know, there weren't really accessible online investment platforms. You had to go through these brokers, and just really high fees, and felt quite inaccessible, really. And I studied finance and really loved it, and just really wanted to invest. I really enjoyed seeing how like the economies thrive and businesses come together, and I enjoyed the maths of it too. I'd say like my first investment wasn't really a traditional investment. I supported my brothers and sisters through school, and so a lot of my spare money went towards that. And I always consider that as my first investment, because that's how it felt to me at that time and where I really wanted to invest. And I believe in investing having non-financial returns also. But then in terms of my first, I guess, purchase of shares, I did get shares through working at Xero and their employee share option scheme, but I didn't purchase them. But my first ever shares I purchased were actually through Sharesies when we launched.
That is amazing. I just wanted to say, just backtracking a little bit, when you talked about your siblings and how that was your first investment, that quite literally gave me goosebumps. Like, that is commendable. I don't think a lot of us can say that was our first investment, but it just goes to show that investments can be different things, and it's not always to do with money itself.
It really depends on like what your goals, values are, and what a return means to you at that time.
And so when you were younger and you said that like the way to invest was a little bit harder and you sort of had to come up with a bit more money up front, did you look into those possibilities at the time and did they just not appeal to you, or did you get a little bit put off by them?
It's probably like a mixture of that. I looked at the platforms that were available and had the phone calls when you needed to. I set up the accounts. I don't think I ever transferred money in that I can really remember. I know I was learning a lot at university, especially in my master's, and it was actually the global financial crisis had kind of just been, and so we were learning heaps about the recovery of the markets and what caused, people were sort of trying to figure out what caused it really at that time. And so I was definitely in that learning and navigating stage. If there was something like Sharesies at that time where I didn't have to have heaps of money to get started, and something that was a bit more accessible, I would have dived in, I know that.
Like now that, I guess, as someone that's growing up with things like Sharesies around, I can't imagine what it would have been like to want to invest and then actually have to call someone up and like have a conversation about it. Like, I think I just wouldn't do it.
Yeah. Yep, but that is a thing. And that still happens with some ways. You have to invest, people invest these days too. But yeah, it is nice to be able to just have it at your fingertips and invest when you want, how you want, how much you want.
Like the idea that you can just invest like in the comfort of your own home with your laptop by yourself, you don't have to interact with a person. Like, I think that really makes it so much easier and so much more accessible, not just like physically accessible, but also mentally.
More empowering, eh?
So much more empowering. When you first bought your first investment, did you feel nervous at all, even though like it was through Sharesies and you created this account and this huge company? Did you feel any kind of way once you actually put in your money?
Yeah, I have to say, like when we started Sharesies, it wasn't a huge company then. So there was six of us that had founded it, and we had a couple others in the team. One was our general counsel legal role, and then another two was Renee, who at that time, when people signed up, we would send them a letter with a magic code on it that they would need to enter for us to do their address verification. So it was quite a different time back then that we were really hand-drawn at that stage. And yeah, the first investments we provided on Sharesies were six exchange traded funds. I wouldn't say I was nervous. I was just super excited about, oh my gosh, I can use this thing that we've been working hard on creating. And just, it felt such, joy from it. It was also interesting too, because I wanted to, quite early on when I was building my portfolio on Sharesies, I wanted to invest in a bunch of things so I could relate to a lot of the investors that I was talking to. So if I, when they're like, oh, I've invested in this, I could be like, oh, cool. And I would have that, I would have gone on that journey with them, having invested in that certain fund and then soon company. So my portfolio still kind of looks a bit mad to this day with a few dollars here and there.
That is quite amazing. I don't think we give you enough credit with the fact that you went from, I want to invest, investing is hard right now, let's literally create a platform that serves us and everyone else like us that wants to get started. Like, where did the idea come from? How do you go from an idea to creating what Sharesies is now?
Yeah, on that, on your episode with Sonia, she probably goes, I know she goes into the idea creation because she was the first person who had the idea behind Sharesies. But when the six of us go from, okay, we've got this idea, how do we create it? We actually spent 6 months doing pure customer research. All of us founders believe that everyone deserves an equal opportunity to grow their wealth. And with the technology available today, there's just no reason that someone with 5 to $5 million can't have the same investment options. So we really believed that there was an opportunity there. But we really listened to people, and we spent 6 months just listening and interviewing people on what does money mean to them? How do they feel about it? What's the stigmas associated with it? Do they want to be an investor? Are they an investor now? And people, you know, it was so lovely getting those really rich and wonderful insights from so many people, and then being so open with us to help us, you know, create Sharesies at the end of the day. All of this helped. And we also got a chance to interview a representative population of New Zealand. And from that, we found out that 99.5% of people wanted to be investors. So it was an aspirational thing. You know, people wanted to be, but they felt that they couldn't be because they felt like they needed heaps of money. They felt like they needed to know heaps and have a degree in finance, essentially, and then ultimately felt left out, and that investing was just something for the wealthy few. And so we've set out to completely eliminate those barriers, and having that really strong vision and real clarity from all those conversations we've had just propelled us to, you know, obviously quit our jobs at that time and just go all in on creating Sharesies, and yeah, never look back 4.5 years later.
And when you were sort of going through that journey, or in your job before, or when you were studying, did you find that you faced any challenges, like being a young woman in finance? I can't imagine that it was quite populated with women at the time, or even now.
Yeah, there were not too many women, or a lot of underrepresented communities in my finance classes, and even in my master's classes too. And then when I was working in banking, very often I'd be the youngest in a room and the only woman, or maybe one other in a group of maybe 15. So I think what was really helpful though was felt like I had a lot of support from others in the room, and people wanted to succeed, me succeed, and I felt like there was some other strong wahine throughout those companies that kind of had my back. But yeah, I think I learned heaps early in my career, and ultimately felt like there's a bit of a tidal change in guard, I guess, was starting to occur with more women and more focus on increasing women in finance. And now I hope there's more and more focus on increasing underrepresented communities in finance too, because the more that we help create the system, the more that the system will be more accessible for more people and relatable.
I really like that last point. And this is something a lot of women that we speak to kind of bring up. They feel like when they're in spaces like where you are, or where you were when you were younger, that feeling of imposter syndrome. Did you go through anything like that? And if you did you do something to overcome it?
I've been hearing recently a lot of or seeing some articles about, like, hey, we've got to stop talking about imposter syndrome. And I haven't fully unpacked that yet, but I think what I've learned as I've gone through my career is that so many people have those crises of confidence, you know, and you can have them at different times. And so, yes, I think I definitely have that. I think in my nature, I just always want to be doing better for myself and for others. And I think in that way, you kind of have those ups and downs in terms of your own confidence and what you can do. And then some in my career too, I was in roles probably ahead of when I kind of, well, I've maybe felt like I deserved them, which may bring this up anyway, or kind of answer this question, where, you know, I didn't have the experience, but I definitely had the attitude where I wanted to go in and learn heaps and give it a go. But when you're going through that journey, you're like, oh my gosh, you know, you can feel quite out of your depth. But when I look back in my career too, I feel like quite often I've felt like I'm in sink or swim situations, but realized like I actually was only set up to swim because of the mentors or the leaders I had that I was working with. They were really there to support me, and that's pretty special. And that's what I hope to do for people too, is make sure that they always feel like they can swim but have that ability to really grow how they want.
That's really well put. I like that. I like how the conversation is starting to move away from the idea of imposter syndrome, but more so like, do you have the attitude to go and do it? Because if you do, you might be a lot more supported than you think you are.
Yeah. I think that's a great thing I've learned going on this like entrepreneurial journey too, is there's a lot of support out there and a lot of other like entrepreneurs and also in female entrepreneurs who really want to support the next generation of entrepreneurs or whatever it might be. And I think that's fantastic that there is a lot of support out there, and here in Aotearoa people seem to be a lot more accessible and willing to help people too, which is great.
That's very true. You'd be surprised by how many people will take you up if you just ask them for a cup of coffee and want to hear their story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to women and investing, obviously we've all heard the stats, women don't invest as much as men. Women are apparently more scared than men when it comes to investing. But from someone that is the CEO of Sharesies or the co-CEO of Sharesies, why do you think that we as women aren't currently investing as much as our male counterparts?
So I think it's more systemic than kind of on us. I think that when, you know, the system's been run by predominantly and created by predominantly men, we haven't been as included in the past and haven't had those kind of that richness of that conversation kind of handed down to us, or like being in rooms where there's, you know, investing has been talked about or business has been talked about, like, you know, in the past, and that's kind of, you know, inherited. And but that is changing. On Sharesies, around 42% of our investors identify as female, and I think it's really exciting, the change there. And obviously the more that we start to create the financial system, the more that we get to get access to participate in a way that's created for us, with us, I think that's really exciting. And there are some factors that have played a part in this too. You know, the gender pay gap, if you're a woman, and depending on the industries, but typically are paid less than men, and therefore, so you're kind of on a back foot there. Because of that, we also live longer, which means it's really, really important that we do invest, or that our money is working harder for us, especially if, you know, we've got a longer life that we need that money for. We're more likely to take a career break, whether that's for children or people in our family that we support. And that means again that you know like your KiwiSaver might stop when you take that break, and obviously the income can go down, and so there's those kind of factors that are at play too. And that's why it's just really, really important that more women have access to investing and build their wealth over time with amounts they can afford. So when they're living their longer lives, they've got longer to enjoy it, but also when they can have that freedom and that empowerment to support their whānau or their reach the goals that they want to. And so I'm really looking forward to the day when, you know, 50% of the money is in women's hands also.
You know, out of all of the times that I've asked this question, not to be biased, I think that's probably my favorite answer. It really isn't just in the hands of women when it comes to why aren't we investing as much. And I think we see a lot of shame and guilt put onto women in terms of why aren't you good with money? Why aren't you investing? But it's really, I like the idea of sort of stepping back and looking at it from more of a systemic view, and how is everything set up to even begin with?
There's actually research that women make great investors too, because we're more likely to take a buy and hold approach rather than like a buy sell kind of approach. So, and what buy and hold approach means is that go, oh look, yep, I'm interested in investing in this fund and company, and then we'll hold it. We won't be there trying to second, you know, like actively traded or anything. And historically, over time, a buy and hold approach has been a really proven investment strategy. And so, hey, we're good at it when we do it.
We are. And I wish more of us knew that. Now, when it comes to Sharesies, you guys are a B Corp and you're one of the first financial companies in New Zealand to do this. Do you mind speaking a little bit about what that means and how it sort of ties into the ethos of Sharesies?
Yeah, I am super passionate about this. I really believe that business should be a force for good, and that we're here to create, like, if we look at businesses generically, we're here to serve people, to create products and services that enrich people's lives and improve society over time through innovation. And I think that it's really important that businesses are a force for good, and that we're making a positive impact on our customers, our community, our environment, and on our people too, on the people that work at the companies that are B Corps. And so we decided to become a B Corp at Sharesies early on. We always wanted to be. You had to have a year's worth of registered or have a year's worth of revenue before you can become a B Corp. And so we waited till we got that hurdle and then got our application together. And it was it's a big process. Like, to become a B Corp, it's not a small feat, eh? It is really big. And I was so stoked to see that, because it gave me so much more reassurance and, like, I guess, pride when we did become one, because we knew that there's such a rigorous accreditation behind it. And so it took, 6 months or so in order for us to become a B Corp once we started our application, to having our audits and then being approved. And yeah, for Sharesies, we really care, and we really track, making sure we're having a positive impact. And a B Corp doesn't mean the business is perfect. It just means that we really care about being better and making a positive impact and finding ways that we can continuously improve. And, rising tide rises all ships. And I think it's really important that, as you know, we increase the standards of what we expect from businesses and see how they, can really make a positive impact.
And when it comes to, like, being a B Corp, obviously that sort of falls into the idea of, being more sustainable and more environmentally friendly and such. We have a lot of listeners at home that really are interested in investing in companies or funds that have some form of a focus on sustainability, on being, better for the environment, whether that be through women in leadership, whether that be through green companies. What are your thoughts on investing in that kind of way? Because we have some people that go, yeah, they're great, and then some people go, oh, like, it's just greenwashing. Do you have any particular thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think first off, I just want to make the distinction is, like, Sharesies as a company is a B Corp. The investment options we offer on our platform, we decided the most impactful thing we could do is provide people choice, because when we did all that 6 months of research early on, and obviously we continue to do research constantly, we learned that what was ethical to someone or what was seen to be sustainable was a real continuum. There's a real differing amount of views there. And so what we decided is we would give people choice, and they could choose what they invest in. And on Sharesies, you can search for, sustainable or responsible investment options. You can even search B Corp and see listed companies that are B Corps. We've got the whole range of businesses on our platform. And I think when it comes to, is that a good way of investing in terms of investing in sustainable, companies that have really high ESG scores, so meaning that they've really think about they've got great governance, they've got societal impacts and environmental impacts that are positive and that they track. And it really is up to each individual. I personally really think about when I'm investing, is this business good for the world? What do they care about? What's their company made up of in terms of, like, their board to their management team? And do I believe that this business should exist essentially. And when you're investing, you're essentially putting, you know, you're voting with your money. You're going, I think that I want to be an owner of this business and back it essentially. And that's what you're doing. Well, that's one way to look at it, look at investing.
That's a really good way of looking at it. I like that. And when it comes to investing, so, you know, when we go back to how you were when you started, your first investments, when you were learning, what does Brooke's investing portfolio look like now? Would you mind diving into a little bit of, you know, what you've currently got, if you don't mind?
I probably can't say the individual stocks and things like that. What I can say is it's still a bit of a, we've still got a few dollars here and there from making sure I was being able to have great conversations with our investors by like, oh yeah, I've got a bit of that too, and kind of tracking it. But really, I do care about businesses that are a force for good. So I'll put my money into companies and funds that I think are going to have a great impact on the world and are needed, and you know, impact driven really. So that's where I put my money. I am a kind of high growth investor. About 85% of my investments are kind of in higher risk, because I, you know, plan to keep it in there for the long term and kind of watch it grow from there. So hopefully that gives you a bit of flavor.
Oh, we like that. And being a high risk investor, or someone that likes a bit of growth, how do you deal with things fluctuating a little bit more than they would in something else?
Yeah, I think fortunately I've built up 4.5 years of resilience of that now, since we've, you know, first make an investment with Sharesies. I know people find it sometimes hard to not just keep looking at, but I think when you know, when you have invested in businesses or funds that you think are investing in things that are meant to be or doing good, then kind of just ride that wave. And I don't kind of obsessively check my portfolio, and yeah, just know that I've got that long-term horizon and invest like that, really.
And do you find that you're someone that like likes to invest consistently, like every week, or are you kind of like, when you've got time to, you sit down and you go through it? Like, I feel like with Sonia and I, with at Girls That Invest, Sonia is very like, this is my auto invest, I stick to the same thing, and I'm a little bit more all over the show. Do you kind of fall into either one of those categories?
I'm like both of you. I have auto invest that I've set up, so I feel like, so I have money going every payday, and have that going into my DIY auto invest, and so I know I've got that happening. And then I use, yeah, other, if there's extra money or something, I put that into, I usually have some money in my wallet, so I know that I can act on something if I want, or if I find out something I'd like to invest in, and yeah, invest that based on what I see, and kind of what's coming up. So both, really.
There's a lot of really good pieces of wisdom in this episode. I really appreciate it. Now, before we wrap up, if someone's listening at home, they want to start investing, but they're not really sure how to get started, or if they should get started, what would be, not a piece of advice, but maybe a word of wisdom you'd give them, or if you were speaking to, you know, young Brooke when she was getting started, is there anything that you'd like people to take away before they head off?
I when I was studying finance, and I think the first finance class I had, I learned about the time value of money. Now, I learned like the mathematical equation to that and what it's made of, but essentially what I learned is like the most valuable aspect of money is time. So if you're starting out investing, I think there's a quote saying, you know, the best time to start investing was 10 years ago and the next best time is now. And I think actually Sonia mentioned that the other day, but I agree, like I think I wish I knew that around compounding returns and compounding interest earlier in my life. And in term, we actually just did an investing 101 webinar too, which has some great investing concepts and stuff. And yeah, I think you've got this essentially.
Yeah, that's a nice way to put it. I'd just like to say thank you so much for coming on, for sharing all your pearls of wisdom and letting us dive into your life a little bit. It's been very interesting hearing little snippets of your journey and sort of seeing what it was like being a young woman going into this kind of financial space that even to this day, sadly, isn't as equitable as it could be. And so it's been awesome hearing your journey. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I know you're very busy, so we really appreciate it here.
Oh, I really appreciate you taking the time to interview me. It's it's a great podcast, and it's really important the mahi you and Sonia are doing. So kia ora and thank you.